Islam brings hope and comfort to more than a billion people worldwide. Islam affirms God's justice and insists on man's moral responsibility.
We have great respect for the commitment that all Muslims make to faith, family, and education. The killers who take the lives of innocent men, women, and children are followers of a violent ideology very different from the religion of Islam. These extremists distort the idea of jihad into a call for terrorist murder against anyone who does not share their radical vision. And I believe the time has come for all responsible Islamic leaders to denounce an ideology that exploits Islam for political ends and defiles your noble faith.
President Bush talking on several occasions about how he views Islam as a religion in the world, as a force in the world, a world of thought and a worldview. Well, this is commonly heard that Islam is fundamentally a religion of justice and peace, and yet it is distorted by those who are referred to as radical Islamists or whatever title we want to put to them, maybe as simple as terrorists. Is this true? We're going to be talking about radical Islam for the next 45 minutes of Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Welcome back. You can join us with questions or comment. Bridget Gabriel is our guest. 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-MYIE. You can also email us with questions or comments. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Is it true that radical Islam is just a political philosophy that's taken over or hijacked an otherwise perfectly good and peaceful religion? Bridget Gabriel formerly worked as an anchor for an Arabic news program. She's founder of Act for America. She's authored a new book, They Must Be Stopped, Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It. Bridget, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you, Todd. I'm delighted to be back with you.
When we look at radical Islam, are we looking at Islam 200 proof?
We are not seeing radical Islam to the way we should see radical Islam. I have a chapter in my book, They Must Be Stopped, titled Purists Drink Their Islam Straight. And what the chapter details is when we look at Islam and we tend to divide Muslims into the moderates and the radicals. But because of the lack of understanding of the religion itself on the part of the West, we tend to say, well, this couldn't be the religion asking people to do that. And what I do in that chapter is basically dispel the myths of the radical Muslim. This is a straightforward inside look at a devout enemy motivated by religion who is willing to destroy the whole world in order to achieve our complete submission under Islam. They are following in the footsteps of the Prophet Muhammad, and what we call radicals are nothing more than purists following the Quran down to the letter and following in the footsteps of the Prophet.
Bridget, what is moderate Islam then?
Moderate Muslims are Muslims who believe that they are equal to all other people from all faiths. That is something completely different than what the Quran teach Muslims, that they are superior to all other people. Infidels are supposed, like Christians and Jews, are supposed to stay alive as dhimmi, protected as the people of the book, but only as second-class citizens. Moderate Muslims do not believe that people should be killed, like gays and apostates. For example, gays, simply because they have a different sexual orientation, even though most moderates do not agree with the gay lifestyle. However, they do not believe that you should go out and kill somebody just because he is different. Also, the moderates do not believe that you should kill the apostates. You should have a freedom of religion. You should be able to choose if you do not want to follow this religion or that. You have that choice as an individual. That's what moderate Muslims believe. However, Islam as a religion preaches that apostates should be killed. There is no other gray area. And that's when you really start looking at the Muslims and Islam, and you start thinking, what is the difference between the radicals and the moderates? Is the Quran really that radical? And the answer is yes. The Quran by itself is a radical document with a violent ideology and a political totalitarian ideology, even though most Muslims are moderate and do not subscribe to the Quran.
Did the history of Islamic terrorism begin in the 60s or the 70s or in 2001 with the attack on America?
You mean political Islam?
Well, Islam's association with terrorism, per se.
Well, actually, Islam's association with terrorism began in the 630s when Islam spread out of Arabia by the original Muslims headed by the Prophet Muhammad. Many people don't realize that Islam ruled the earth for 1,400 years. At one point, Islam covered more of the earth's surface than the Roman Empire covered at its peak. And Islam spread through societies by killing and converting societies into Islam, in many cases robbing people out of their language. It is very radical. And actually, I discuss in the book that the Crusades, which many people, and especially our generation, they do not really care that much about history. History is boring, and especially in America, which is very sad. But when you look at the Crusades, for example, the Crusades were not launched because a group of Christians decided, well, you know, we think we're going to go and just declare war on other nations. The Crusades were launched after the 1900s when the Pope in Rome told Christians, how could you sit back and allow your brethren in Jerusalem to be slaughtered and treated that way? And the Crusades were launched to go back and liberate Christian lands conquered by Muslims, where they killed those who refused to convert, and those who stayed alive, the Christians and the Jews, were made to pay the dhimmi. And the Crusades were able to recapture Jerusalem for less than 100 years, until Salah ad-Din took it back, and then the Crusades died around the 1300s. They couldn't even defeat Islam. It took the European Industrial Revolution, which gave Europe the money and the weapon development in order to be able to go back and liberate Christian lands conquered by Islam from Spain to Italy to many other European countries. We are now seeing that rise of radicalism back, and their goal is to take over the world and bring back the Islamic Caliphate.
I heard someone say, well, what they're really looking for is to at least regain those lands that they once held, the former extent of their territories. Is that true, or is it a genuine world, global domination?
It is true on two levels. They do want to gain back almost all the territories that they had captured before, because Islam divided the world into Dar al-Harb, which is the house of the infidel, and Dar al-Islam, which is the house of Islam. And the house of Islam means all nations where Muslims live. Muslims are united under the Ummah. And Dar al-Harb, basically the house of war, is any place where Muslims do not dominate. So they are at a constant state of war with infidels. Right now, in my book, They Must Be Stopped, I discussed a chapter about the returning of the caliphate and how now they are aspiring not only to bring down the Islamic rule over all the nations that they had already conquered before, like Spain and many areas in the world, but also in basically infiltrating nations like the West, like Australia, like America, like Canada, like Britain, and taking over culturally.
With about a minute here before we take our first break, Bridget, do our elected leaders in the West have an accurate or a sufficient understanding of Islam?
No, they don't. Sadly, they do not. Some do, very few do, but the majority do not. And this is why our effort is so important in educating them and teaching also the American public what Islam is all about, and that even though most Muslims are moderate, peace-loving people, we are facing a radical minority right now that is driving the agenda.
You say in your book that we need to be paying attention to the radical minority, even though it is a minority. We cannot live with the illusion that the average westernized Muslim is going to somehow prove a good ally against the minority. Why do you say that?
This is a long answer that I hope to answer after the break, but I'll give you a tip. Most Germans were not Nazis, yet the Nazis were able to drive the agenda, drag the whole world into war, costing the world 60 million lives, 14 million in concentration camps. Only 7 million were Jews. So those moderate Germans who sat on the side and said, well, that's not going to affect me, it ended up affecting them and affecting the whole world. This is what we're facing with Islam. We must pay attention to the radical minority right now, and that's the only group of people we need to focus on and defeat.
We're talking with Bridget Gabriel. She formerly worked as an anchor for an Arabic news program. She is founder of Act for America and author of the new book, They Must Be Stopped, Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It. We're going to give this book away to listeners with the best questions or comments this hour. Our call-in number, we're coming to you live this Wednesday, September the 17th, 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-MY-IE. and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Before we go to this break, about 30 seconds here, Bridget, what do our leaders need to know if you had 5 minutes with President Bush or with the present Prime Minister of Great Britain? What would you say to them about Islam that they need to know?
Stop calling Islam a religion of peace. It is not. You are deceiving the masses and becoming complicit by saying things that are wrong and untrue. You need to stand up and say the truth, even though the truth is not politically correct. But as leaders, you must stand up and be counted.
1-877-623-MY-IE is our call-in number, 1-877-623-MY-IE, or talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, I want the longer answer to the question that I asked before. Bridget gave us the shorter answer. I'd like the full version. Our elected leaders seem to fail to understand or insufficiently understand radical Islam and Islam in general. Okay. There seems to be a mindset that because there are a fair number, especially in Western Europe, of more moderate Muslims, that they will prove to be powerful allies in standing up against radical Islam. Or states where Islam rules in a more moderate way, they could perhaps be powerful allies in standing up against radical Islam. Is this true, either here at home or abroad? We'll answer that question with Bridget Gabriel, talking about radical Islam after this. Welcome back to Issues Etc. A half hour left in our conversation with Bridget Gabriel, author of the book, They Must Be Stopped, Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It. 1-877-623-MY-IE. We're giving a book away to callers with the best questions or comments. Talkback@issuesetc.org. You gave us the shorter answer before the break, but I'm interested in the longer answer, Bridget. Since our elected leaders have an insufficient understanding of Islam, we often hear them talk about gathering together or at least reaching some consensus with Muslim states that are not involved with Islamic terrorism and getting them to speak out and condemn radical Islam or getting them to serve as allies with us against radical Islam. Is this realistic thinking on the part of our leaders?
No, it is not realistic thinking. It is entirely irrelevant. It is meaningless fluff meant to make us feel better and meant to somehow diminish the specter of fanatics rampaging across the globe in the name of Islam. The fact is that the fanatics rule Islam at this moment in history. The silent majority is absolutely irrelevant. Look at communist Russia. Communist Russia comprised Russians who just wanted to live in peace. Yet the Russian communists were responsible for the murder of about 20 million people. The peaceful majority were irrelevant. Look at China's huge population. It was peaceful as well. But the Chinese communists managed to kill a staggering 70 million people. The average Japanese individual before World War II was not a warmongering sadist. Yet Japan managed to kill its way across Southeast Asia, killing 12 million Chinese civilians. The peaceful majority was irrelevant. And also, who can forget Rwanda, which collapsed into butchery? Can't we say that the majority of Rwandans were peace-loving? And look what happened in Rwanda. What's so amazing, Todd, is that history lessons are often incredibly simple and blunt. Yet for all our powers of reason, we often miss the most basic and uncomplicated of points. Peace-loving Muslims have been made irrelevant by their silence. Peace-loving Muslims will become our enemy if they don't speak up, because they're going to wake up one day and find that the fanatics own them and the end of their world will have begun, just like what the Taliban did in Afghanistan. And then again, when you look at peace-loving Germans, Japanese, Chinese, Russians, Rwandans, Serbs, Afghan, Iraqis, Palestinians, Somalis, Nigerians, Algerians, and many others who have died because of the peaceful majority did not speak up until it was too late. So as for those of us who watch all this unfold, we must pay attention to the only group that counts, the fanatics who threaten our way of life.
Mark is calling from his car. Mark, thanks for waiting and welcome.
Pastor Todd, in Western civilization, we have an idea that all men are made in the image and likeness of God, which serves as the foundation for respect for all people and for human rights. I was wondering if they had a similar idea in Islam.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's a good question. Bridget?
No, they don't. That is the problem, because we in the West believe, like you said, that all people are equal, created in the eyes of God. In Islam, only Muslims are the superior race above everybody else. Only Muslims are blessed by Allah. Everybody else is inferior. And this is where the problem comes. And on top of that, you have all the hatred in the Quran, the scriptures, against the against anybody who is non-Muslim. One quote in the Quran, for example, that most of the radicals use before they commit suicide bombing or killing or even beheading. Here's what the Quran says. This is chapter 8:12. Give firmness to the believers. I will terrorize the unbelievers. Therefore, smite them on their necks and every joint and incapacitate them. Strike off their heads and cut off each of their fingers and toes. End quote. This is a very, very classic example of clear description of the Quran on how to treat anybody who's non-Muslim. And let me clarify one very important thing. You hear a lot of Muslims talk about, well, there are many peaceful verses in the Quran that talk about the people of the book. That is true, but those peaceful verses in the Quran were written in the earlier version of the Quran when Muhammad was trying to appeal to the Jews to accept him as the last of the prophets and accept Islam. When they refused, he turned against them. And Muhammad said, there's a law of abrogation in the Quran. If there are two verses contradicting each other, the latter verse wipes the first verse, and the latter verse is the verse to be followed. So all the latter verses of the Quran, they start talking about killing and butchering the Jews and the Christians are apes and pigs, and all that type of language. And this is the true law of the Quran that should be followed. And that's the problem that we are facing in trying to reform Islam, because as far as they are concerned, Islam is reformable, is unreformable. These are the words of Allah, and you cannot touch it or change it.
Paul in High Ridge, Missouri, emails us. He says, it is with great frustration that I hear politicians at various levels of authority pretend either from ignorance or naivete that for political gains to make unrealistic claims about Islam. A quote-unquote moderate Muslim will not be moderate if Islamic purists gain their way, not unlike others who are threatened. Examples, Germany, the former Soviet states. No matter how you spell Quran, the text tells one and only one thing, that it is that you are either a Muslim or a slave or dead. Has Bridget ever spoken with the present presidential candidates? And if so, what have they said about Islam? I know a bit of European history, so this woman is pretty much on the mark. Through the Crusades, they were not totally against regaining the Holy Land, etc. Your answer to his question about having spoken with any of the present candidates for president on Islam.
No, I have not, but we do have the executive director of my organization, Act for America, was working on the McCain campaign, and I actually took him out of the McCain campaign to work as our executive director. So we do have a straight line to get the message across to the McCain campaign, but in reality, the McCain campaign does get it. It is only the Republicans, and I'm speaking as an analyst, as a terrorism analyst and an author who watched both conventions, the Democratic Convention and the Republican Convention. And when you watch the Democratic side, none of them, nobody wanted to talk about radical Islam or Islamofascism or its threat to national security, while the Republican side, from McCain to Palin to everybody else, continuously talked about the threat of radical Islam to America, to national security, the threat of Islamofascism. McCain said he's not going to waver and not stop using the term, because this term is a threat to the United States. This is the type of leadership we need to get. Hopefully one day I will have the chance to meet with any of our elected officials in the top positions and be able to address them personally.
What are we watching happening in Western Europe now with the Muslim populations on the increase?
It is very scary what is happening in Europe, because it is the model to what's going to happen in the United States. And They Must Be Stopped, my book, I dedicated chapters called The Muslim Brotherhood Project for North America. And the Muslim Brotherhood Project was written in 1982, and it was actually found in Europe by a raid by the Swiss government. And this project is a 100-year plan to infiltrate and dominate the West, establish an Islamic government on Earth. Now, when you look at Europe and you see since 1982 until now, how Europe has morphed from Europe to Eurabia. Europe is no longer the Europe that you and I remember as young people or as our parents remember it. Who would have thought that this week Sharia law has become the official parallel law in British society to govern Muslims and all Muslim affairs? We're talking now. And in my book, I discuss that the infiltration is not only happening in Europe, because the Muslim Brotherhood Project talks about a twofold fight against the West, a military jihad and a cultural jihad. We know they're trying to attack us militarily, and we're taking the necessary precautions to prevent such an attack. But the cultural jihad is moving full force, and we are asleep. And here are some of the examples I talk about in the book. Who would have thought that Sharia law would come to Harvard University, which in 2007 regulated women-only gym hours? An imam in Des Moines, Iowa, gave an opening prayer at the 2008 Iowa legislative session in which he called on Allah to, quote, give us victory over those who disbelieve, end quote, meaning victory over all of us infidels. Muslim taxi drivers in Minnesota are refusing to pick up passengers carrying alcohol. The first Islamic public school, the Khalil Gibran Academy in New York City, opened in 2007 and was funded by tax dollars. American colleges are designating Islamic prayer rooms on college campuses for use by Muslims only. Islam is being taught in public schools as an official course in elementary, middle, and high school. Who would have thought one day we're going to get to a day where the fine line between the separation of church and state is being completely erased by Islam, not Judaism and Christianity, because America is a Judeo-Christian society?
Does Islam have a concept similar to the separation of church and state, the separation of mosque and state?
No. The mosque is the state, and the state is the mosque. There is no separation, and this is what makes Islam very different than Christianity. In Islam, the Prophet Muhammad was not only a religious leader, he was also a military leader. He himself led 27 battles. So he was a warrior, and he spread his religion using political strategies and gaining political grounds, and this is how he advanced his religion. And also, in all Islamic states, look at Saudi Arabia, for example, look at Iran. The state governs the people with Sharia law, the Islamic law. It is governed according to the Quran and not anything else. And the Quran is very specific about man-made laws. Man-made laws are not considered official under Islam. It is only Islamic laws set by Muhammad and Allah as to be followed in the Quran, the Hadith, and the Seerah. And Sharia law is created out of that teaching in Islam.
Bridget Gabriel is our guest. We're talking about radical Islam. 10 minutes on the other side of the break. Plenty of time for you to call with your questions, your comments, or to email question or comments to us right here in the studio, talkback@issuesztc.org. The toll-free number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE. When we come back, what needs to be done and can it be done? Still time for your phone calls and your email on Radical Islam, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-MYIE, or talkback@issuesztc.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Wednesday, September the 17th. This is Issues Etc. Bridget Gabriel is our guest. She served as an anchor for an Arabic news program, founder of Act for America, and author of the new book, They Must Be Stopped, Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It. This email comes from Dennis in Michigan. Bridget, will you please ask your guest if she believes whether an Islamic country can effectively adopt a democratic system of government? The Quran seems to favor a theocracy, which I believe would mitigate against democratic principles. Your thoughts there, Bridget?
He is correct. We have seen it already in many Muslim countries. around the world, even those who we call moderate, like Egypt, for example, like Jordan, for example. We do not look at Jordan the way we look at Iran or we look at Afghanistan. We think Saudi Arabia, Iran, Afghanistan are theocracies. They are run by the religious mullahs. But we look at Egypt, for example, or Jordan, we say, well, it's not the same because they are moderate. However, when you look at the laws on the books, they have Islamic laws down to honor killing. Honor killing in Jordan is permissible by law. Basically, the man gets a little slap on the hand and he walks away because of references to the Quran. So it is impossible to have a democracy and an Islamic state combined together in one geographical area, because the Quran is very clear about the degradation of women. You cannot have a democracy and consider women as second-class citizens and the property of men to be raped, to be beaten, to be molested, for example. The Quran is very clear about marriage at the age of 9, and it follows the Prophet. The Prophet married a girl at the age of 6 years old and consummated the marriage at the age of 9. In the West, we consider that pedophilia. We lock people like that up in a prison, and we throw away the key and call them child molesters. So while in the Quran, this is, you know, permissible by law, and you see that in Saudi Arabia and Iran and everywhere else. So no, democracy and Islam do not mix together.
How would you respond to someone who says, well, look, if the Muslims want their Sharia law, if they practice it privately with their own in their own little enclaves or in their homes or something like that, who are we in Western democracies to worry about that? What would you say?
He is right. If they stay in their societies and they practice their culture, they have every right to do so. However, when they immigrate to Western nations, they have no right to impose their religious views on us. For example, I used Harvard University in an earlier example. Let's say you have a son and you pay $50,000 a year to send your son to Harvard University so he can get a decent education. Part of your son's tuition, which is an arm and a leg, is the use of the gym. Why your son, who's an American, cannot use the gym on certain days and certain hours because he is considered a filthy infidel, and Muslim ladies need to use the gym because of their religion by themselves where no men are allowed. This is America. If this is the way they want to practice, they are very welcome to go live in Saudi Arabia or Iran or anywhere else. Don't impose your religious practices on us in the United States.
Albert in Costa Mesa, California writes, I grew up as a Christian in Alexandria, Egypt. I understand your guest's comments, but I'm a bit wary of what often sounds like mass hysteria from Christians about the Muslim agenda, especially when we do not get any concrete or clear suggestions for counteraction. So what does your guest suggest common average Christians or citizens, I would add, do in response to the threat of Islam in the West? You have some solutions, Bridget. What are they?
Yes, I have some solutions, but I also would encourage him to read my book and the chapter about the Muslim Brotherhood, because it lays very clearly their plan. And it shows that this is not hysteria on the part of every Christian who is just concerned about Muslim expansion. Our concern has true foundation based on what our enemy is telling us they want to do to us. And here is, I give different areas in the book that people can do to help to change the tide of Islamofascism. For example, with our organization, Act for America, we tell people, we know that in America we have a clear separation between church and state. We encourage parents who have children in public schools to please get involved with the PTA, get involved with school boards, find out what your children are studying in public school. And when your kids bring home homework about Islam where they are urged to study the Quran and memorize Quranic verses and fast for Ramadan in public school as a part of the public education, that is not acceptable. You need to bring this issue to the school board and say, we have a separation between church and state in America. Just as much as we cannot teach Christianity or Judaism or anything like that, we do not want our children being taught Islam, and especially when they are being taught lies about what Islam is truly about. There are many things we can do, and I give tips not only in the book but also on our website. What we're trying to do now is basically mobilize the nation and teaching them how they can do different things in their community. We now have 200 chapters nationwide and over 50,000 members involved. And we give tips. I urge everyone to go to our website and sign up to receive our emails. We give tips, for example, if you live in a community and you are suspecting that there is a radical mosque or a radical activity happening in your community, go down to City Hall, find out who owns the deed to that mosque. It's public information and it's free. Write the name down. Is it a Saudi foundation? Is it people outside of this country? Bring the names home. Call your local FBI office. Turn the name to them. This way the FBI will start monitoring the activities and they'll be able to find out if some suspicious activities are happening in the mosque that should be monitored. This is a simple activity that does not cost you, the American citizen, anything but maybe 2 hours at your local city hall to find out some information and a free phone call to your local FBI office. We give many tips like that where Americans can get mobilized and know that they do have power to make a difference. We just posted on our website the Congressional Scorecard, an educator voter guide, education project for the upcoming election. We now tallied the scores of all the votes of all our elected officials, congressmen and senators, since 2003 on how they voted on issues regarding national security. The John Doe bill, for example, which protects Americans from lawsuits when they report suspicious activity, different issues like that. We have now 3 senators running for a very high position. I encourage you to go to our website, check the congressional scorecard, find out how your elected officials voted so you can become a voice affecting your community and our nation this upcoming elected season. And this way you can send a very clear message to Washington, D.C. and to our elected officials. If you're not going to see the light, we're going to make you feel the heat. You have been elected to protect the United States of America and its citizens, and it's your duty to do so, and we're monitoring you to make sure you do so.
How would you respond with only a minute here, Bridget, to someone who says, look, this is, while there are certainly historical roots to Islamic expansion, this is a flash in the pan. This is isolated both geographically and in history, and soon we'll be worrying about something else other than radical Islam. How would you respond?
See, the sad reality is in America, we have such a short attention span. I am somebody whose 9/11 happened to her in 1975 when the Muslims blew up my home, burying me under the rubble wounded in Lebanon as they shouted Allahu Akbar. I was 10 years old. Look what they did to the Copts in Egypt. Look what they did to the Assyrians in Syria, the Hindus in India, the Armenians in Turkey. Who would have thought that 2 million Armenians were massacred in Turkey at the beginning of the century? We're not talking distant memory here. We're talking less than 100 years ago. America only woke up on September 11th. It's time we as a civilization, we as people, get educated about what we're truly dealing with and start opening our eyes.
Albert in Costa Mesa, California, give us your mailing address. Email it to us at talkback@issuesetc.org, and we'll send you a copy of Bridget Gabriel's book, They Must Be Stopped. Bridget Gabriel formerly worked as an anchor for an Arabic news program, founder of Act for America, and author of the new book, They Must Be Stopped, Why We Must Defeat Radical Islam and How We Can Do It. Bridget, thank you again for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. It was a pleasure being with you.
Tomorrow on the program, we'll visit with St. Louis Post-Dispatch columnist Colleen Carroll Campbell, and we'll discuss Grace Alone with Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, continuing our series with him on the great solas of the Reformation, the great alones. The greatest danger, and there are dangers, believe it or not, there are dangers, not only from radical Islam, but from Islam if it is thoroughgoing Islam. And of course, the percentages over here in the United States are so small, but they were once small also. In Western Europe, there was a time, right around the time of the Reformation, when Islam threatened not only politically, but also religiously, the very heart of Europe. It was a very close call, believe it or not. Were it not for some bad weather and some bad planning on the part of the military that were standing at the gates of Vienna, Western Europe might today be either Muslim or looking back on a Muslim history. But the greatest danger is not living under Islamic rule or Sharia law. These things are tremendous dangers. The greatest danger is that Islam is a false religion with a false hope and a false God. And those who were enslaved most deeply by Islam are not even those who labor under its terribly restrictive laws and its low view of women. Those most deeply enslaved by Islam are those who believe it, who believe in its false God and its false hope. There are slaveries deeper than living under Sharia law, or having your religious freedom taken away from you, or having your life taken away from you. There's a deeper slavery. It is the slavery into false teaching, a false hope, and a false God. The true gospel is, in fact, freedom. It is not found in governments or coming out of the mouths of our leaders, but coming from the church that continues to speak, even in the face of Islam and its many dangers. The message of Christ crucified for sinners, this message frees people. Even when they live in otherwise slavery conditions, it frees them once and for all. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.